County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why this December, we're launching a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka The Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's special episode of the County Cricket Podcast is none other than my Welsh co-host, Lucy Rees. Lucy, it's been a while. I must admit, it's the first time in ages that you've been on for an interview, so this is a nice surprise for today's podcast. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, it's been good, yeah. Like you said, it's kind of intermittent at the minute with my job. I'm up here on the odd one, but yeah, hopefully I'll be back as a more regular soon.
Absolutely, yeah. Just to address the TCCP elephant in the room, I suppose. I mean, a lot of our listeners have said they've been missing yourself and Joe. So just to explain it for the listeners out there, Lucy, why haven't you been on the podcast as much? Just to give them a little bit more context, shall we say?
So the past month and a half, really, I've got a new job as a sports journalist, working kind of all over Wales, writing reports on rugby, gymnastics, golf, cricket, football, everything.
Well, yeah, exactly. So that should give a little bit of context behind Lucy's absence. Folks, she will be back on more podcasts, don't worry. And with regards to Joe, Joe's been working for United District, so he's been covering Manchester United, all the football, stuff like that. So hopefully the three musketeers of the County Cricket Podcast, we can unite at some point before the Ashes. But yeah, for the time being, folks, it probably will be a lot of the Cricket Connoisseur, especially for the interview ones, because yeah, basically, I'm the one who's a little bit more free when it comes to the old world of cricket. And talking of interviews, that is exactly what today's podcast is about, because I'm absolutely delighted. I cannot tell you how pleased I am to welcome back one of our OG guests here on the County Cricket Podcast. The man, the myth, the legend himself, you all love him, Mr. Jake Lintott. So Jake, first things first, mate, thank you very much for coming back on. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket and the Ashes later on in today's episode. I'll ask the exact same question, mate. How's your day been so far?
Yeah, it's been good. Good. Thanks for having me on, guys. Really, really looking forward to chatting. It's been a while, like you say, so it'd be good to talk things through. It's been a busy couple of weeks. We're back in training now. S&C is getting his teeth right into us. So it's not been the prettiest couple of weeks in terms of a lot of fitness work. And yeah, the boys are working really hard and just trying to sort of get the bodies conditioned again up to Christmas. And it's been good fun to be around the lads because I didn't spend a huge amount of time with them throughout the summer for various reasons. So that's been nice. And yeah, it's been good so far. I've had a bat and a bowl and lifted some weight. So we're all good.
Good stuff. That's what we like to hear, especially if you are part of the Warwickshire faithful. And talking of Warwickshire and the Bear and Ragged staff, last night, Jake, yourself and some of the boys were at the Coventry Building Society Stadium for the Coventry versus Birmingham match. I have to ask, how was that experience last night?
Well, the football wasn't great, and that's coming from a League Two football fan. The quality wasn't very good, but it was a great atmosphere, and it was obviously, we got fantastic reception. I was a little bit anxious, actually, as to what reception we were going to get from 24,000 football fans, but it went pretty well, and they got behind us, and there was loads of you Bears. And so, no, it was a nice feeling, and obviously, yeah, it's pretty special to be parading a trophy around that stadium last night.
Yeah, it looked pretty cool. I must admit, you did get an excellent reception. I've seen the video on social media. The world's greatest fast bowler, Ollie Stone, was there as well, wasn't he, Lucy? You know, you're a massive fan of Ollie, aren't you? Same with me. He is the best seam bowler in the world, though, isn't he?
No, we're not going through this again. We've already been through this on Twitter today. No.
To be fair, I think we've lost count the amount of times we've actually been through this. It's not even an argument. It's not a debate. It's a statement. It's a fact. Okay, I'm merely presenting it. When a guy's got an average of less than 20, and he's taken 4 for 68 in Chennai. He's up there, in my opinion. But we aren't here to talk about Ollie Stone's test average or indeed Coventry versus Birmingham. Instead, Jake, we're here to talk about the 2021 season, because since the last time that we spoke here on the podcast, an awful lot has happened. It really has. And before we get into the summer, your time in the 100 and the CPL as well, I just want to take it back all the way to the start of the season, right? When you got that contract with Warwickshire County Cricket Club, what were the emotions like? What was going through your head when you finally got that deal with the Bear and Ragged staff?
Yeah, no, it was obviously, I think we spoke prior to that happening, and it was quite a frustrating period for me, having done quite well in the COVID season, obviously. And yeah, things hadn't really moved forward as I'd have liked. And that was just, you know, a sign of the times, really. All the clubs were sort of going through periods where struggling a little bit financially, and it was, yeah, I just had to be patient. And then when that opportunity came around, and had discussions with the club, you know, it was when I first signed that first professional contract, is just, yeah, a special feeling, you know, right up there with anything that I've done. So you suddenly, you know, get this feeling of pride, and yeah, it felt pretty special. And I think also the fact that, obviously, we're both biased, but to play for such a huge club, and have 3 years with that club is yeah, I can be really pleased with that, and really excited. I've got a couple of years left, and hopefully we'll play longer than that. So yeah, it's been great. It's been great.
Well, Jake, that is wonderful to hear. And well, I said at the time, I was absolutely delighted when you got that contract. I really was, because I know how hard you'd worked during that season, COVID, not just on the cricket as well, but the fitness as well. Like, that's been a massive part of your journey here at Warwickshire, and it was brilliant. It really was a fantastic moment, and thoroughly, thoroughly deserving. I must admit, 2020, you were exceptional. 2021, I was thinking, surely this guy can't get even better. And as we'll discuss in today's podcast, you somehow managed to. So that is an excellent sign for the future. So before we get into, I suppose, your experiences outside of county cricket, the franchise stuff, the CPL as well, which I do want to discuss in today's podcast, before we get into all of that, how would you describe your experiences in the T20 Blast this summer with the Bear and Ragged staff? How would you go about putting those into your own words, per se?
Yeah, I'd say mixed, really. Like, it was really exciting because we had fans come back in. And although it was only 25%, it just felt that little bit more normal, which was really nice. And obviously going into this year, it's going to be even better from that perspective. But yeah, it was a little bit frustrating. I think we've got a lot of potential within the squad, and we're just a little bit up and down in terms of our consistency. But, you know, we still reached the quarterfinal. It's a positive step. We got it out of the groups, and yeah, we were obviously disappointed with our performance in the quarterfinal, and we felt like we had more in the tank, really. So it's quite exciting going into this year. We've obviously added some players in, and we've not seen anything of the likes of Chris Benjamin really in T20 cricket for us, and Al Davis has joined the club, and Carlos has taken over the reins, and everything just, yeah, seems to be moving nicely in the right direction. I think last year was sort of a real good building block for us. We don't feel we're that far away, and yeah, if we can really, you know, tweak a few things and improve certain areas, we feel like we can give it a proper nudge.
Absolutely, and I think it goes without saying, but I'm obviously going to agree with that as a Bears fan. So I suppose, Lucy, as our only non-biased resident here at the podcast today, I have to ask the same question. What do you think of the Bears' chances heading into 2022? We've mentioned those moves. We've no longer got Ed Pollock. That is going to be a big loss at the top of the order. We're still looking for some recruitment in terms of bolstering that top order from a batting perspective. But we have got Carlos Brathwaite back. He's going to be the captain. Alex Davis. I'll tell you what, I bet he's happy that he's not on the podcast today, because Alex Davis is one of his favourite players. He'll say that he's not, but he definitely is. Okay, myself and Joe have had so many conversations. He was one of his favourite Lancs players, and now he's a Bear. So I'll have to get my co-host thoughts on that at some point. But he has joined the Bear and Ragged staff. We know how quality he is as a prospect in that top order as well. We've got an excellent bowling attack. Henry Brooks as well, fingers crossed, will be fully fit for next season, Lucy. How do you see the Bears going about in the T20 Blast in 2022?
Like you said, I think they've got a good chance, obviously, with the sign-ins and stuff. I think Carlos is going to bring a lot to the team. And the other thing as well, obviously, with the county championship win last year or this year, I feel like, you know, they're going to be wanting to build on that even more. So they're going to be going for it in the county championship and T20 and even the one day stuff as well.
Absolutely. Jake, would you agree with that? Has it fired up the boys per se, that championship victory?
Yeah, for sure. I think we had a meeting probably a week before pre-season as a whole squad. It was really good, actually. We got everyone in the same room, just chatting about where we wanted to go and what we wanted to do. We made a real, you know, I think it was Brez actually who just at the end of the meeting just reminded everyone that, you know, the championship's actually gone now and we've got to move forward. Like, we can't just rest on our laurels, and we've got to try and, you know, pretend like we're trying to win it again now, and we've got to start again. So we're all really conscious of that. It's very easy when you win something to take your foot off the gas. You see that with a lot of teams, and that's something we're trying to, you know, immediately stamp out and push forward. And obviously the T20 is a huge, huge part of that. We want to win the T20, but also, yeah, we want to win the championship again, obviously. So it's an exciting time. We're lucky we've got a lot of depth in the squad, and we feel like we can cater for most things. So yeah, it's a really exciting time to be there.
It most certainly is, and that honestly puts such a big smile on my face, especially after 2019. That was such a tough year. For those who don't know, right, I went up and down the country watching Warwickshire. I was at Grace Road when Colin Ackerman took 7 for 18 under the Sky Sports cameras, under the lights. And I just thought, surely we're better than this. We had so much talent in that squad. And in 2020, we started making the right steps. I know not necessarily in the Bob Willis Trophy, but the building blocks were in place for a quality Bears team. And in 2021... I'm going to be completely honest, I didn't expect it to happen this year, but my goodness, the team just turned over a new leaf. It was so, so good to watch, especially in the championship. And Jake, I know that you didn't really play many games in the championship, but what was it like being part of that core, that group, that unit that eventually ended up winning on the 24th of September 2021?
I guess the thing, firstly, like, although I didn't play, I played one game and wasn't around a huge amount, every single player in that squad felt a part of it. And that was something that I think Robbo's installed in us. And as a group, we're sort of mucking in together, everyone driving in the right direction, all having the same sort of goal, really. Obviously, we want to improve individually within that, but there's definitely a real desire amongst that group. And I think so that championship run, I think we'd be lying if we said at the start of the season we sort of pictured ourselves winning it, but the guys just gained more and more belief as we went on, and it was great to see players sort of grow and have the, and basically just gain more and more confidence as the season went on. And you know, the performances from Yatesy, Pasty and Milo and others around that, you know, there was loads of brilliant individual performances. And the nice thing about it was, it wasn't sort of one player who dominated. It was more, you know, the collective that won us that championship. So yeah, it was special to be a part of, and I was there for the whole 4 days of the last game, and it was a special place to be. The changing room was it was a really impressive environment, and I'd obviously come from other environments into that, and it was great to see the lads all pulling in the same direction, really.
Well, I can't say I was there in the dressing room, but I was there at Edgbaston for all four of those days. And that evening session on day 4, I'm going to be honest, that is one of the best days in my cricketing life. I honestly don't get emotional at sport, but let's just say the waterworks were flowing maybe at the end. Tears of joy, okay? Not upset, not sadness, anything like that. But honestly, couldn't believe it. I genuinely could not believe it. I missed 2012. I wasn't there at New Road when the team lifted the trophy. And to be honest, I thought I'd be waiting for years to actually get that opportunity to witness it happen. And it happened in 2021. And you think back to 2020, and everyone, this isn't just Warwickshire, all 18 first-class counties, the entire country, the entire world suffered massively through COVID. We weren't allowed to go into grounds. We suffered a lot in 2020. So the first season back, I know it wasn't full crowds necessarily. As you said, there was a 25% cap for most of the season. But the first season back at our spiritual home, my summer home, as I call it, to witness that team lift the biggest trophies all, it was exceptional. It really was. It was remarkable. It's a day that I'll never forget, to be honest. And Jake, when Liam Norwell took that final wicket, what's going through your head? What are the emotions like as the celebration started?
We were sort of, I can't remember how many wickets we needed at tee. Might have been five wickets maybe. And, you know, there was this sense of like, this is going to be quite tough, like team battling it out. And it all just happened at once, didn't it, really? It happened real quickly. I was on the dugout with Ethan Brooks and Chris Benjamin, and yeah, we were celebrating every wicket like it was our last. it was special, and yeah, it will stand with me for a long time. And it's something that, you know, it made me realize how a part of that I want to be. Like, I want to be playing in those games. I want to be more a part of that, because it was really special. And the lads obviously have, you know, it's a great experience, and it'll stand the whole squad in good stead moving forward. You know, it gives that hunger of wanting that feeling again.
100%. And it is so, so special. Honestly, we can't underestimate just how big of an occasion this was to the county. Just the eighth time in our 139-year history. It's massive. It's absolutely massive. And it's a day that will live long in the memory of the Warwickshire County Cricket Club faithful, and rightfully so. Honestly, I'll never, ever forget that day. I never will. I'll keep banging on about it until the day that this podcast ends as well, because it was remarkable. It really, really was. And Lucy, were you watching that on day four, or were you watching Surrey versus Glamorgan, watching Ricky Clark in his final game? What was your choice of live stream on that fateful day?
Unfortunately for you, I was watching Glamorgan. Sorry.
Are you a Glamorgan fan, Lucy?
Yeah, I am, yeah. But I lived in Cheltenham for 3 years at university, so I'm actually like a bit of a Gloucestershire fan as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can. Yeah, okay. That's fine.
To be fair, Lucy,
you've had a tough old ride then, really, the last few years.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, we pulled it back this year with the 50 over cup, so I'm happy.
That's good. Yeah, it was a great win.
Oh, it was brilliant. That really was brilliant. We spoke at length, didn't we, Tom Cullen, about that. That was a fantastic, again, another fantastic moment. And we saw three of those this year, didn't we? Warwickshire winning the championship for the first time since 2012. We saw Kent winning the T20 Blast for the first time in 14 years. And then, yeah, Glamorgan, first trophy in 17 years, Lucy. The first trophy that you've ever seen them lift, isn't it? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
My goodness, what a year 2021 was. And honestly, the quality of county cricket has been remarkable. It really has. When myself, Joe, Lucy, you've appeared on a couple of the weekly review shows as well. Honestly, the performances just seem to get better and better and better and better. And that final few weeks, especially, I'd say the last two in the championship, when we got Chris Wokes, that's when the tide started to turn, I think, in Warwickshire's favour. We had such a horrible defeat to Hampshire in the second week of the group stage. And then, Chris Wokes, what a man. Jake, actually, I have to ask, what is it like sharing a dressing room with the man, the myth, the legend himself, Christopher Roger Wokes? What's he like?
He's exactly what it says on the tin, really, Wokes. He's literally the best bloke I've ever played cricket with. He's the best looking bloke I've ever played cricket with. He can't do anything wrong on the field. And there's not a lot wrong with Chris Wokes, really, is there? He's top drawer. And one thing that sort of sticks with me is every time you see him, or you might not see him for a while, and he pops in for a for training session, he's just the most welcoming guy. He's straight over to you asking how you're getting on. Like, he's just a real team man, and to have him around and his experience definitely, like you said, would have played a key part in that run in. And I think it was actually quite nice for him, because he's played a lot for England and he doesn't get that opportunity very often to represent Warwickshire, and he felt a real part of it. And, you know, it was special for him. I think you could see at the end, it really meant the world to him. So that was quite nice for us to see how much it meant to him as well, coming back playing for Warwickshire.
I think the other thing to understand and realise in that situation as well was the wider context. Chris Wokes could have gone to the second half of the IPL. He had a deal waiting for him, obviously quite a hefty deal. It's the IPL. They are well paid. He could easily have gone and played for the Delhi Capitals and not played for Warwickshire. But you know what? I have so much respect for Chris anyway, but that respect just, you know, it got even greater. When he made that decision to play for his boyhood club and to have that chance to win yet another county championship, he was part of the 2012 squad as well as a younger lad. But honestly, I can't say a bad word about him. I genuinely can't. He follows us on Twitter as well. Chris Wokes is an absolute legend. He's a legend. Honestly, one of my favourite ever cricketers. He's one of our own. He's from the Midlands as well. Every single time he plays for England, there is that, you know, that extra sense of pride, and you want him to do well. So, yeah, Chris Wokes, legend. Give him a statue. Give him an end. I think, actually, Jake, I have to ask, would you rename one of the ends at Edgbaston after Sir Christopher Roger Wokes?
It can't be far away, can it? It can't be far. I mean, I'd be an advocate for it, so you don't need me to, push that.
I definitely would be. Lucy, what about yourself?
Well, yeah, I see what you mean. If it was like my ground and he was, you know, my team, yeah. But yeah, he is a legend, so yeah, I'd say so.
Absolutely. It's a shame that we can't say the same with Ian Bell, because as you know, if you put those three words together, yeah, it doesn't really make for the best of wording, shall we say, if you named an end after Ian Bell. But hopefully a statue or a members room or something like that. Ian deserves some commemoration as well, to say the least. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But Warwickshire, if you are listening, Chris Wokes' end, we want to see it. I'll happily sit there for every single game of cricket at the Fortress. But Jake, in terms of some other highlights from the season, I suppose this is more of an individual perspective now. What would you say was your real individual highlight from the season? Would it have been your T20 Blast performances? I remember you took 4 for 20 against Northants at Wanted Road. Would it be, I don't know, appearing in that quarterfinal against Kent under the Sky Sports cameras? Would it be your first-class debut? What would you say was your real monumental milestone from the 2021 season?
You know what, like, for everything that's happened, there's no real like standout moment, but for the first time in sort of my life, I was living what I'd always wanted to do. So I guess, you know, that culminates as a pretty special feeling as it is. Like, once I was sort of winding down with teaching and, you know, getting to train every day, it's special, you know, being a part of a team and playing a sport that you've always loved is, you know, it doesn't get much better than that. So I was just really content with that. I was obviously delighted with how it went. I was really frustrated by the period that I missed through 10 days of isolation that with COVID. That obviously was, yeah, it was awful timing, like really frustrating. I felt like I was making huge strides and then, yeah, it did take the wind out of my sails a bit. So that was really frustrating because I felt like, yeah, I was building and you know, at the end of tournaments, you know, the players who play all the games, I wanted to be right at the top of those leaderboards and I wanted to be, you know, really pushing my case. And that sort of 10 days, I think I missed like 3 or 4 games, which is a huge amount of games in a season. So that was really frustrating. And then, yeah, the championship debut, you know, I didn't expect to play. I bowled in the nets the day before. I was in the squad, but I was never planning to play really, and I bowled really well in the nets and got the go ahead really. We turned up and the wicket was used and got the green light. And yeah, I took it probably a little bit like, oh, took it for granted because it was so surprising. But now I reflect on it and, you know, to be a part of that championship winning squad. And yeah, I might have only played one game, but it's really given me a hunger to really work at my Red Bull game and the batting side as well is going to be really important for me. And yeah, trying to force my way back in. So yeah, there was loads of positives throughout the whole year really. But like I said, the overriding factor was, you know, I was doing what I'd always wanted to do.
Absolutely. Sorry, I was just letting a plane go ahead. Plane has just passed my house. So apologies if there was any background noise on that, listeners. But yeah, I completely agree, Jake, to be honest. A fantastic, fantastic moment as well, isn't it? Your first-class debut. Making that, I know obviously you didn't take a wicket. That is a bit of a shame. But it's still a massive moment, isn't it? You say about realising the dream. So many of us here in England and Wales and overseas as well want to play county championship cricket. That is a dream of ours. It's a dream of thousands and thousands of people. I know you said it was a little bit, impromptu, shall we say. You weren't expecting it. But how would you describe your experiences playing Red Bull cricket for the first time in a first-class environment?
Yeah, I loved it. It was great. It's not something I've done a lot of Red Bull cricket away from the county game in terms of minor counties, and I've done quite a lot of second team stuff, but because of the teaching career, I wasn't able to play any Red Bull cricket. That was my first game of Red Bull cricket that summer. So sort of give some context to, you know, my performance, I guess. I was really pleased with how I went. You know, I think the worrying thing as a wrist spinner coming into a four-day game is that you don't give the team any control. And felt like I gave the team a lot of control and obviously didn't take the wickets that I'd have liked. But, you know, that's part and parcel of it. You know, little decisions and things like that don't go your way, and that's how it works out. But I think the overriding factor was just like I was really pleased with how I went, given my build-up into that had just been white ball cricket, really. So, yeah, really pleased. Gave me a lot of hunger to get more games, and it's definitely an area of my game that I really want to work at. I'm pretty comfortable. I'm still working at my white ball game. Obviously, there's loads of things that I want to add into that to make myself better, but my Red Bull cricket is a big priority for me, yeah.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I think that's a nice place to pick up the first of our fan questions from today. So this is from Tom, aka Y2Bubbly, on twitter.com. Jake, do you see yourself as a white ball specialist, or do you still have ambitions to be a quality Red Bull bowler as well? I'm guessing the answer to that will be yes.
Yeah, no, definitely. I don't want to be pigeonholed as a white ball cricketer. I think I've been really effective in white ball cricket for various reasons, and less effective in Red Bull for reasons as well, which I'm sort of trying to work at. I'm trying to generate more bounce, trying to generate more spin with my leg break, because, you know, my real threat is my googly and being sort of quite skiddy off the pitch and making it hard to hit. So in Red Bull cricket, it's a different skill set. You're trying to get the ball, you know, to bounce a bit more off the surface, and you're definitely trying to spin the ball more. You only have, in white ball cricket, you only really need to beat the bat by sort of, you know, 3 or 4 inches, and a little bit either way is effective. So just trying to make myself better in that regard. And then I think the key thing for me fundamentally is that, you know, I've got to be a number eight and 7-8. I've got to be able to contribute and score runs as a wrist spinner in Red Bull cricket. And because the chances are, as a wrist spinner, you're playing as a second spinner. There's not many wrist spinners play as a number one spinner. So the likelihood is that I'll play with Briggsy, or we'll play on a used wicket and I'll play, or there's an injury and I'll play. That's the most likely outcome. But, you know, I've got to keep moving forward and keep trying to work at my game to give myself that best opportunity of performing when the chance comes.
Well, that's excellent to hear. And because you mentioned your batting, I know this is a different format. This is T20, and I think you know exactly what's coming, Jake, by the smirk on your face. But we have to talk a little bit about that knock in Canterbury. We have to. I know it didn't go our way, and I was gutted as well. I was absolutely gutted when we lost that quarterfinal. But I was at the game. Of course I was. Yeah, I made the trip down, got stuck in a load of traffic on the way towards Canterbury, missed the first 7 overs of Kent's innings, and then Sam Billings went absolutely ballistic and destroyed our bowling. And then we got off to a terrible start, and then something quite extraordinary happened, didn't it, Jacob, with your batting. Something which, I'm going to be honest, I wasn't expecting, but it was brilliant. It was absolutely phenomenal to watch. Can you take us through that night, if you could? For those who don't know, a blistering 41 in a T20 Blast quarterfinal. How would you go about describing and putting that experience into your own words, Jake? Where did that come from?
Well, I think the biggest frustration for me in the last couple of years has been juggling two jobs and not being able to spend a period of time working in my game week in, week out. Like, that's been, you know, I've done all of this just by training once a week, really. So I know you don't want me to mention it, but when I was away in the 100, that gave me a huge opportunity to, I had coaches there every day. Whenever I wanted to have a hit, I could have a hit. And I was hitting hundreds of balls a day, like just batting and batting and batting. And that innings, I guess, I had a net the day before the game, and Robbo was sidearming at me, and, you know, my whole like mentality had just changed. Like, I'd just become this guy who, you know, wanted to hit sixes and wanted to hit the ball and had the confidence to do it. And that just came about through practice, really. And I think batting is ultimately a lot of mental battle, and I've always had the ability to do it. I've just never been able to transfer it out onto the pitch professionally. I've done it in club cricket and minor counties and stuff, but I've never transferred it into T20 cricket. So it was just about get. Once I got one away, you know, I just, you know, I had loads of belief and just backed myself really, and just tried to whack it and had a load of fun. And the real disappointing thing was we were, you know, the wicket was flat. It was a good wicket, and yeah, we should have cruised 160 on that. So it was great. It felt amazing, and I can take a lot from that moving forward. But you know, it still hurts me now that we lost that game of cricket. And yeah, it was, you know, Kent were the team that won the competition, and we felt like we probably should have won that game.
Yeah, I would concur with that. Yeah, that was quite a lonely drive to, I think it was Ashford. Yeah, that's where we were staying, Ashford Premier Inn. Yeah, that was quite a...
Did you watch the game against Kent?
I didn't actually. I'm not really coming across much of a Warwickshire fan.
You only watch Glamorgan, don't you?
And Gloucestershire. No, I do watch a fair amount of county cricket. I just had a bit of a hectic summer, so it was basically manic.
To be fair, Lucy, in this scenario, it's probably for the best. I'm going to be honest.
It does sound it, yeah.
I was gutted. I was absolutely gutted. And the other thing about Canterbury as well, just for those of you who haven't been to Canterbury, bring a torch or put your phone light on. It's so dark at night. I couldn't believe it. We almost lost the car. We literally couldn't see where it was.
Strange ground. It's like, I didn't realise, but it's like more sloped than Lourdes. It's great, like really sloped. I had no idea. I'd never played there before. But it was a pretty hostile atmosphere as well. There was plenty of abuse on the boundary, which, you know, I love that. So that's fine.
I was going to say that where I was sat, funny enough, Chris Wokes was actually fielding there. He was, I don't know, a couple of metres in front of us. And so he was getting a lot of stick, loads of stick. And he took a catch at one point, started shushing the crowd, which, to be honest, hasn't gone well in the past. I think he did that against Pakistan and we lost in the 2019 World Cup. And he did it again this year and we lost again. So maybe that's just something not to do in the future. Chris, please, please don't shush the crowd. It's not gone well in the past, but... Honestly, that was a pretty incredible night if you're a Kent fan, but for us, very disappointing. But with that being said, Jake, I must admit, that 41 was great entertainment. It really was. On a night where we were a little bit low, the Warwickshire fans had made the trip. That just boosted us massively. And you did hear the odd U Bears as that knock started getting underway.
Plenty of support for us there. No, it was good. I think, like I said, that my batting side of my game is going to be big for me moving forward. You know, I want to really push my batting as hard as I can because it's going to give me more chance of playing games and ultimately I want to play. So yeah, that's a big focus for me throughout the winter. Yeah,
absolutely. And Jake, you did allude to it beforehand, the tournament, which I don't tend to mention. Okay, I'm going to be completely honest, it's not my thing, and that is of course the 100. But Lucy, you did work on the 100 this summer, so I think it's only fair that, you know, if you want to give it some attention, We do, okay? I mean, it exists. We can't do anything about that now, as much as I protest against it. But Lucy, do you have any...
For a long time, it will exist for a long time.
Well, I'll tell you what, I won't be making the trips for the 100. I'll be watching the Bears in the 50-over cup. But yeah, Lucy, have you got any questions surrounding the 100? Because just for those out there who do want to know more about, Jake, your journey in the tournament, it's only fair to be honest.
Yeah, so Jake, I just want to really... Could you just sum up basically your experience in the 100 for us?
Surreal. Yeah, it just really opened my eyes to things, and it was special to be a part of. Obviously, my goal at the start of the summer was to get wildcarded. I was disappointed I didn't get picked up originally. And that's part of cricket. You know, you're not going to get picked in all the time. So I just used that as a bit of, you know, driving force and tried to really push my case. And luckily I was a bit worried actually, because when I got COVID was like the week before they were doing the draft. So I was a little bit worried about that. But yeah, once I got that opportunity, got that call to be wildcarded for them, it was just excitement really. I worked with one of the best players who's ever played the game. I played with players who, you know, are some of the best players in the world, and felt a part of a team which was so supportive of one another, and it was just a great environment to be in. And then added onto that, the full crowds. Like I remember the biggest takeaway for me was I remember playing in the final at Lords, and I was standing at third man and the countdown was going. It was like 10, 9. And I just looked around and I was like, this is mad. Like, when you think what I was doing a year ago before that, to playing in front of 25,000 people in a tournament that's shown all around the world, was just amazing. And then to win it, you know, it doesn't get much better, really.
Fair enough. Still don't think it's better than the Blast, but that's my opinion. Again,
to be fair, I haven't had the opportunity yet of playing in front of full crowds in the Blast. And I know Edgbaston, I'm really excited to play at Edgbaston next summer in front of full houses, because I know we hopefully when we play Worcester and teams like that, we'll sell it out and get the place rocking, which would be awesome.
Oh, you don't need to hope for that. The Derby always sells out. Trust me. Honestly, 2019, again, we were on the losing end of the Derby to Moeen Ali. Honestly, that knock was ridiculous. I think he scored a century.
I was there. I was sat on the dugout because I was playing in the twos that summer. And I think that was the year Greeny, Chris Green and Ashton Agar were the overseas spinners. And then Jeets was there as well. So I was waiting in the wings that summer. But yeah, I did see that knock. But the atmosphere was incredible. The Hollies was, yeah, awesome.
Yeah, the Hollies is something else, to be honest. Lucy, have you experienced the Hollies or not yet?
No, I'm trying to get you to take me, but you won't, because you're like, I sit elsewhere. So
hang on. I was in there for the Notts game this summer, which again didn't go Warwickshire's way. It's maybe that's why I don't sit in the Hollies. Again, when I'm in the RES Wyatt, we win games. I was sat there for the Worcestershire Derby this summer and we won. But no, I said next summer, Lucy, we'll get you to Edgbaston at least. Okay.
I will come up and we will sit in the Hollies and I'll bring a little Jake Lintott sign and, you know.
It was nice that we played in the Midlands group. We had played the Morgan, didn't we? So when they had three groups, which I think might happen longer term anyway. So we might get to go to a Warwickshire Glamorgan game.
Yeah, it was. I liked that setup, to be honest. I thought it was good.
I think now they're condensing the tournament, and just like 14 games in a month is hard work.
Yeah.
I think maybe they'll look at 10, but we'll see. And yeah, that was quite good because you get to play. I don't know why we can't just play different teams like all the time or just mix it up a bit, because it was nice. Like the quarterfinal, we played Kent. We've never played Kent for a long time. It's nice to play different teams each year. So that would be a nice twist, I reckon.
At the same time, though, you have to think of the fans. That's all I will say. Yeah, that's why the North group and the South group is, for the most part...
Glamorgan's not very far from Birmingham, though.
That's true. Although
Durham is a lot further.
I can say that from experience, yeah. 3.5-hour drive this summer. To be fair, I love Durham, though. It is a fantastic ground. Again, the Riverside, I do thoroughly, thoroughly recommend that. But we'll have to wait and see. And with regards to condensing it, I don't know. I'd be in favour of condensing another tournament and maybe prolonging the Blast. But that's just... It's so obvious, isn't it? My thoughts on the 100. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see. 2022, though, Lucy, we'll get you to Birmingham for a game. It's absolutely fantastic. Edgbaston, full house. Not a ground like it. I'm going to be completely honest. Yeah, I don't think you'll ever experience cricket the same ever again after one night under the lights at the Fortress. But from the T20 Blast, from the Championship, there was also one more competition, a rather prominent competition that you appeared in 2021. One of my absolute favourite franchise leagues, and that is the Caribbean Premier League, the CPL. You played for the newly named Barbados Royals, who used to be the Barbados Tridents. And I have to ask, when did you find out about that opportunity in the first place? How did you find out you're going to be playing in St. Kitts and Nevis?
Yeah, so it was, I'll try not to mention it again, but it was off the back of my performances in the 100. So I got a message really from my agent just saying that, you know, Barbados are willing to take me for, because I couldn't, because of the quarterfinal, I couldn't go for the start of the tournament. And I was really lucky, you know, Mark Robinson and Paul Farbrace let me go. It would have been easy to keep me around and I might have played in the championship game at Lancs. But, you know, they saw that as a great opportunity for me to go and develop and play with more world-class players. And I'm really grateful to that because it was a balance for me as well. Like, I wanted to stay and I wanted to go. Like, it was a real toss-up. But, you know, I think getting that exposure to playing in a franchise league in the Caribbean was pretty special, and to play against some of the world's best again is just constantly standing me in good stead, which was great. It happened pretty quickly. I hadn't had my second jab. It was like panic, need to have my second jab. It was all a real like rushed process, and luckily I got that in time and got away. And yeah, it was brilliant. The tricky thing about it, obviously, at the moment is it's all in one ground. So the wickets were pretty average to poor at times. The facilities there are completely different. Like, they're way below anything you'd expect. You'd expect like decent facilities. They're really low level. And that just a credit to the West Indies, really, how they continue to produce decent, like real good cricketers. When their facilities are so far behind where we are as a country in England. So it sort of grounded me a little bit, made me realise how lucky we are over here. And it was a great experience. I'd love to go when it's island to island and no COVID and not locked in my room. I'd love that because I know there's a bit in the press about people questioning players, moaning about bubbles and moaning about... that sort of thing. It is extremely tough, and it's not, you know, you wouldn't think staying in a 5-star hotel and being locked in the hotel is bad, but it's not ideal. It doesn't give you that escape. You're sort of with your teammates all the time. It can get a bit on top of you. So that was tough because I'd just come out of the 100 as well, and that was similar. But yeah, I'd love to go again. Fingers crossed, if I can perform well this summer for the Bears, that they'll take me again. And yeah, I'd love to be a part of it when it's a bit more normal. I think it'd be unbelievable.
It is. I love the CPL. I've been watching it ever since the first edition in 2013. Personally, I'm a Jamaica Talawaz fan. Have been ever since the first edition, two times winners in 2013 and 2016, respectively. So I do know my stuff when it comes to the CPL. And you mentioned about the grounds, the different atmospheres. Honestly, I would love to experience it one day, in particular Guyana. It's brilliant. Guyana apparently has got such a fantastic atmosphere, and you can sense it from watching it on the broadcast as well, the Queen's Park Oval in Trinidad. Yep. You got the Bridgetown Oval as well. Let's not forget that. Kensington Oval, in Bridgetown, yeah. Barbados. I mean, there's just so many fantastic grounds in the Caribbean. And I have to ask, really, Jake, how did that experience in franchise cricket differ from county cricket, in your opinion? Because it's not a question I don't think we've asked very often, to be completely honest, but I think you're an ideal candidate because you played mostly county cricket and you've now played franchise cricket just this summer. How did the experiences differ? Were there any different things that you had to do, any different types of preparation? Obviously, the personnel would have been different, but were there any real differences between franchise cricket and county cricket that you can recall, per se?
The one thing I would say, which I think is huge and something that we're trying to take forward as a squad, as it is, obviously with Carlos coming in to captain our T20 side, Will Rhodes done a fantastic job. But Will's got so much on his plate. Like he's burnout. Like, he's captaining every format. It's tough grind. And so I think it'll be really good for Will actually just to, you know, have some time where he actually just can focus on his cricket. And having Carlos step in is brilliant. And I think the big thing that I've learned is just how relaxed the environment is, and that whatever happens, people back you 100%. Like, it doesn't, if you have a bad day, you see it often in franchise cricket, people will have a bad run, but people stick with them and they back them. And it's, I just think it's an environment we can get sometimes a bit tense in county cricket, and that we put a bit too much pressure on ourselves. And actually, you know, do we need to train every day? Probably not. Do we need to, you know, the environment is just a lot more relaxed, and players trust their processes, trust their prep. And, you know, if a player feels they don't need to hit balls that day, that's fine. If they feel like they need to hit loads, they can. There's just that real flexibility with it. And I think that's something we're trying to take forward, is just having that real freedom going into T20 cricket to, you know, take the game head on and just really attack teams and go out with no fear. And it's obviously really easy to say, it's very hard to do. And I think what makes it easier is having people around who can do it. And I remember Carlos spoke to us as a group before last season's competition, and he said one thing that stuck for me is, like, if we're going to try and score 200 every game, which we are going to try and do, that's what we're going to try and do. We might not have tried to do it last year, but that's what we're trying to do. If every game, every time we go out to bat, we're going to try and dominate, then there's going to be times where we're going to get bowled out for 60. There's going to be times where we get bowled out for 80. But that's fine. Like, we've got to be able to move forward from that. So I think that's a really good way of looking at things, is that failure is going to happen. It's just how you park it and move forward. And I felt like in franchise cricket, this is definitely more relaxed environment. And we'll be trying to take that forward, I think, with our T20 cricket and really take the game on.
You see, listeners, this is why I love having Jake on the podcast. That is absolutely outstanding insight. It really is. And it's something which has cropped up now in the T20 World Cup, hasn't it? About intense, being aggressive, attacking the opposition from the get-go. Something which England have done fantastically well since the start of 2020, even 2019, you could argue. To be honest, especially in T20i cricket and in ODI cricket as well. That was part and parcel of the winning formula for 2019 in the 50-over World Cup. It's interesting to hear that, to be completely honest, though. So 200 every single game, and I'm guessing
I'm saying that from a, not like we're going to try and score 200, like, I mean, like, from a mindset in terms of attacking teams, we're going to go out and try and score off every ball, we're going to take teams on. You know, if I hit a guy for two sixes, why not hit them for three sixes? That sort of, you know, non-stop foot on throat attacking cricket. And I think if you look at the best T20 teams, I think England is the perfect example, really. Like, everyone in that team knows their role, and if they don't perform their role, they play the next game. It doesn't matter. Like, it's fine. They move forward because they know, they believe in them. And I think that's where we're trying to get to, is just have that sort of fearless attitude and not worried about making mistakes, and just, you know, trying to be really aggressive in everything we do, whether that's with the ball in the field or with the bat.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just about being positive, and as you said, displaying that fearless mindset. And just going back to Carlos, who has been announced as the brand new captain of the Birmingham Bears for the 2022 Vitality T20 Blast. This brings me nicely on to another one of our fan questions. This is from Cody. He's asked a lot of questions this year as well, so shout out to Cody. Always love it when you send in your questions. But Jake, how big of an impact did Carlos have on the Bears last year? And what are your thoughts on his appointments as the new T20 skipper?
Yeah, so huge influence. He's firstly, he's an incredible bloke, like, just one of the best men you could come across, really. He'd go out his way for anyone, and that's a real good trait. He plays cricket in the way we want to play, so that's really important. You know, when you make overseas signings, it's really important that they're A, going to buy into what you're trying to do, and B, play in the way that you want to play. And, you know, he played 6 or 7 second team games leading into the competition last year, just to get some time in the middle, but also, like, the amount of conversations he would have with young players, you know, that sort of thing's invaluable. And you don't get, not being rude to other overseas players, you just don't get that very often. So that's real, really good. He bought into the club, and everyone loved having him around. And I think, you know, he showed in the 100 with Manchester that he's got good leadership skills. He's led before for other teams. He's very comfortable in that role. And he rang me probably, yeah, just after he confirmed it with Farby and Robbo that that's what they were going to do. And yeah, he was just really excited and couldn't wait to get stuck into it. And equally, you know, like I said, Will's done a great job. But I think it's also great for Will that he's going to get some time just to, you know, play cricket and not worry too much. And Carlos can take the reins and pretty much build on what Will's put in place already. You know, we've tried to implement those things that I've spoken about, and now it will just be about driving it further, you know, forward. So exciting. I think the lads can't wait to have him back around. And yeah, personally, I think it's a great appointment.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. To be honest, as a Bears fan, I was absolutely overjoyed when I heard the news. And not only that, just having Carlos back at Edgbaston, you mentioned about him buying into the club. He was outstanding. He really, really was, not just on an on-field term. He was our leading T20 Blast wicket taker last season, but off-field as well, with the fans on social media, you could tell that he'd bought into the ethos of this club right from the get-go. He's a great character as well, isn't he?
The biggest problem we have, I think, with cricket is it's a stats-driven game, and we look at numbers a lot.
And I'm guilty of that.
Yeah, and actually, categorically, I there are times where numbers are important, and there are times where they're not. And he brings so much more than numbers. He might not score runs all the time, and he might not take wickets all the time. He might go at tens in one game, but what you're going to get is he can bat, he can bowl, he's a good athlete, he's a good man, he's a good leader. Like that all added in is really valuable. And you know, he will definitely win games of cricket. He's a match winner. That's what he's always done. So you know what you're getting with him. And yeah, I think it's great news for Warwickshire.
100%. And yes, I do like my stats. I'm going to be honest, but I understand you have to properly contextualise them. And there are things that can't be measured by stats. I mean, another one is desire, for example. If the heart's not in it, you're not going to play to the best of your potential. You can have all the best stats in the world, but if you're not feeling 100%, all of that becomes irrelevant. It's as simple as that. And he's just such a great character, honestly. I can't wait to see him back at Edgbaston next summer. And Lucy, I know you like Carlos as well, from his time in the 100, also on Test Match Special as well. How excited are you to see him back in county cricket next summer?
Yeah, absolutely loved him in the 100, especially when he liked one of my tweets. but yeah, lovely guy. And I'm like, you saw him in the 100, just on the side of the pitch. He just loves cricket. Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to him playing. And obviously taking the leading role as well.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And maybe appearing on the County Cricket podcast. I'm just saying, Carlos, if you ever want to come on, you're more than welcome. I'd absolutely love that personally.
We'll be Agent Linter on the case again.
Yeah, listeners, when you hear us speaking with Big Carlos, you know why. Agent Lintop, as we said beforehand. But yeah, it's going to be good. I'm looking forward to 2022. 2021 has been an excellent season, not just for the Bears, but wider county cricket in general. You can see with the live stream numbers as well. We've had record numbers across all 18 counties. So I just say this again, I reinforce this statement heading into next summer. Support your counties. Just come down as and when you can, support the boys on social media, you know, just do all of that good stuff, because county cricket is so special. It really is. I mean, for me as a Warwickshire boy, it's our only professional sporting team as well. I know we've got the likes of Coventry, we've got Blues, we've got Aston Villa, Wolverhampton Wanderers, we've got other teams nearby, but in the county itself, this is the only thing that we're known for. And this is the same county which produced rugby union as a sport, but Warwickshire County Cricket Club are our team. So it means so, so much. And as I said, if you can just support them in any way, shape or form, please do. I cannot recommend county cricket enough. It's a very, very special sport. And before we get on to, well, it was originally meant to be our concluding part, to be honest, Jake. This was meant to be a 50-50 split. It might have to be an 80-20 at this rate. We've spoken that much about the Bears. Apologies about that, listeners. But before we get on to our quick chat about the Ashes, I think we'll just wrap up the rest of the fan questions. So the first one is from Brian McMullen. And again, this is a very Birmingham-driven question. But Jake, how's the Brummie accent coming along?
Yeah, it's not very good. And I'd be honest, I try to avoid it as much as possible. You know, when you're sharing a changing room with Matt Lamb, you tend to get enough of it per day. So, yeah, he's... you must have heard Lammy do an interview, and it's he's as strong as they come. So, yeah, it's not the best accent, is it, in the world? And I try and avoid it as much as possible.
Aaron, I think that's your cue to leave.
It might be.
Look how upset he is. Look how upset he is. Brilliant.
Love it. Gets an unfair rap. I'm going to stand up for the people of Birmingham on this podcast. The Brummie accent is absolutely fantastic. Right,
I prefer the Welsh one, Lucy, don't worry.
Thank you.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I've been ganged up on my own podcast. This is shocking. And again, for the people of Birmingham, take pride in your accent, okay? It's a wonderful accent, right? Don't let people mock it. Deserves a lot more respect, Lucy, isn't that right?
I'm not saying anything.
Oh, for goodness sake. I'm looking for you, Lucy, to be my rock in this episode. Absolutely. Shocking. Shocking. If you are from Birmingham, please, please continue to listen to the podcast. Again, I love the second city. Okay, I've grown up near it. I know I don't have a Brummie accent, but trust me, I've got a lot of Brummie friends. And from the Black Country as well, Wolverhampton and Dudley and Sandwell. Nothing wrong with it. Okay, elite accent, in my opinion, from the cricket connoisseur. But yeah, that's enough about regional dialect.
Not that you're biased, I guess. Not that you're biased.
I might be a little bit biased. Just a little bit. But to be fair, talking of dialects, Singer dialects, I have to ask us a quick question about that because it is very topical. We are recording this on Wednesday, the 24th of November. I have to ask, Jake, if you were going to go on that, what would the choice of song be?
On Singer dialect?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He definitely watches it. Look at him.
Can someone explain to me what it is first? Because I went on last night and I was listening to Declan Rice. I was like, what is going on here? I was on the way back from Coventry in the car with Craig Miles and I was like, what is this Singer dialect thing? My song would probably, I like Oasis, so I'd probably pick an Oasis number. I don't know really. I'd have to think about it. But I can't sing, so it wouldn't be very good. So I'd probably avoid it if I could.
Just to give some context behind that, actually, just for the listeners who don't know, we do have a Singer dialect superfan here on the podcast today in the form of Lucy Change the Overs Reese. So Lucy, just for the listeners out there who don't know what the cult phenomenon that Singer dialect is, do you just want to give them a little bit of an insight into what that actually is?
Oh my gosh, I am obsessed. I was actually looking at my watch last night, like, oh, 10 minutes. It's basically a couple of weeks ago, months ago, Twitter launched a new thing called Spaces. And it's basically like a bit of a group chat, but you can basically talk and you have a host. And then some guy called Jacob from Manchester, is it?
Yes.
He launched one called Sing Your Dialect. And then a lot of people, verified, not verified, just come on and sing one by one. And he goes, what a belter. And then bins them, basically. It's basically a karaoke in a space, but it's absolutely taken off.
What would you sing, Lucy? What would you go for?
I've got, karaoke, I can't sing for like the life of me. So I always go for something that people kind of join in, so you don't really get drowned out. And my cricket club are obsessed with the song The Gambler by Kenny Rogers. Okay. So that would be my go-to.
Nice.
But like you said, I'm an Oasis fan and that kind of gets people going, doesn't it? So
yeah.
You have to choose a classic, don't you? I know Lethal Bizzle did Wonderwall, which was quite interesting. Declan Rice did Ice Ice Baby. I'm going to be honest, I might be a bit rogue with my choice. I know it's not Sing My Dialect. In fact, the song I'd choose isn't actually in the English language. I'd choose Dragoste Dinte by Ozone. I think we all know it. Okay, if you don't listen to it, you know exactly what it is. I think that would get Twitter Spaces going quite nicely, personally speaking. But yeah, I don't know. Be funny, that. Lucy, you'll have to go on one of the times, won't you?
I mean, I always request, but, you know, nobody wants to hear me. People are all interested in a bit of Rice Baby instead, so, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, listeners, when you hear Lucy Reese from the Counter Cricket podcast belting out a little bit of Kenny Rogers on Singer Dialect, you know why. It was because of this podcast. But moving on to our next fan question, Jake. This is from Andy Curtis. This is a little bit of a quite a funny one, actually, from Andy. Have your musical choices changed since the bygone days when you were the self-appointed team DJ, routinely taking control of the minibus radio, tuning into various pop stations en route to Somerset age group away fixtures?
Oh, God. There we go. There's a wind. That's winding it back. Yeah, that Andy Curtis was our team manager at Somerset under, would have been maybe 17s or 15s, I can't remember. I'm glad he remembers that. In terms of, because I don't remember being DJ, but I probably was trying to own it with some shocking tunes. So my taste in music is not very good. I'm one of those that I tend to follow people on Spotify because their taste in music's a lot better than me. And I steal playlists from them rather than me try and find music. So my taste in music has not got any better, but I do listen to some decent stuff now that I've got people who I trust.
I've got a question about that, though. Are you kind of one who just listens to someone else's Spotify playlist, or do you copy their songs into your own playlist and rename it under your own?
So I'll listen to their playlist, and if I like a song, I'll like it, and it'll go into my liked songs.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I I spent a bit of time with Michael Pepper over some time off from Essex.
And Ibiza.
Yeah, and he's got unbelievable taste in music. So I'm raiding his playlist regularly, and there's a couple of others as well. So yeah, I'm a song thief.
I have to ask, what is on Michael Pepper's playlist? Is it spicy?
Yeah, there's loads of different stuff. He's got all sorts. Hit him up on Spotify, guys.
Talking of Spotify and things you can listen to on Spotify, the Counter Cricket Podcast. Please do feel free to give us a rating on Apple Podcast as well, whatever platform is your preferred choice. But that was interesting to hear, actually, Jake. I must admit, because if I recall correctly, you didn't say yourself as the team DJ in Warwickshire teammates.
No, I'm not team DJ because of that exact reason. Like, I'm getting there. My music's getting, I'm getting a decent collection together at the moment, but yeah, Lammy's on tunes regularly. Lammy's got decent tunes, but the worst tunes are Henry Brooks by a country mile. His taste in music is shocking.
I've heard that from multiple people in the Warwickshire dressing room. Yeah, some very rogue tunes, to say the least. Yeah. Mate, who knows though? Next summer, who knows, Jake? We might have a new DJ.
We'll keep working at it.
Yeah, exactly. Fingers crossed. And the final one of our fan questions for this week, which, getting back onto the topic of cricket at the Counter Cricket Podcast, other than the Spotify, this is from Griff on Twitter. And he asked, Jake, do you have any tips for improving leg spin?
Well, that's a big question, that, isn't it?
It is indeed.
It very much depends on the individual, obviously. But one thing I'd say with leg spin is that you're going to win games of cricket for your team. It's an attacking skill. That comes with the fact that you're probably going to get hit for some runs as well. And I think the biggest thing for me that I learned as I got older was that it was okay to get hit, and dealing with that, like, failure. Or some days you're going to bowl like a drain and it's going to go badly. But when it goes well, there's no better feeling because you make batters look silly. So I would say, fundamentally, you need to have a really strong action, and all your spin's going to come from the crease, and you know how strong your front side is, your alignment to the target, those sorts of things technically. But then I'd say a bigger thing is that mental side of leg spin, where you need to be able to deal with failure and come back from that failure, because it is a tough skill. Sound like I'm making myself sound better by saying that it's hard, but it's a tough skill. And particularly if your left arm, it's tough. So stick with it. Don't get down when it goes wrong.
I would agree with that for any young spinners out there. And to be honest, Jake, I think you're a testament to that, if anything, because you've just got better and better as you've, you know, got more experience under your belt, as you've had more times in county cricket, you've learned your experiences for minor county cricket as well. The fact is, as a spinner, it's so easy to get disheartened. It really is. We had this conversation actually on our first podcast, didn't we, Jake, with regards to how spinners at times are treated in England and Wales. They aren't necessarily the go-to strike bowler. So there are going to be times when you're not going to be utilised in the way that you want to be. But it's about not being disheartened, and also just accepting that this skill, this trait, takes years to master. Okay, not everyone's going to be the next Rashid Khan bursting onto the scene at 19, 20, 21 years of age and mastering the art of leg spin. It's unrealistic. It really is. But then at the same time, if you look, I look at three spinners in particular right now. One of them is actually left arm wrist spin, and that's Tabrez Shamsi. And the other two are Adam Zampa and Adil Rashid. If you look at them right now, this instant, easily top five bowlers in terms of white ball spinners in the world right now, 110%, all three of those guys win you matches. If we had this conversation 6 years ago, we wouldn't be saying that. You could maybe argue a little bit with Adil Rashid, because again, he does have that googly. He's always had a very, very potent and effective googly, but you wouldn't say that about Tabrez Shamsi.
He was nowhere near the bowler he is now, though.
Exactly. Because you learn it with time, don't you? It's not like seam bowling. That's what people have to understand about spin. It takes so much longer. And I'm not just saying that as an excuse, because I'm an awful spinner who barely gets any revs on the ball. But it honestly is. When you see the professionals, the best people in the world, approaching the peak of their powers at 28, 29 years of age, don't get disheartened at the age of 20, 21, 22, when things aren't quite going your way. Because if you stick at it, if you're persistent, you keep on going, who knows? Life's funny. You never know what opportunities are going to present themselves. And Jake, I did originally say that this podcast was going to be about 45 minutes. That's gone out the window, hasn't it? As it usually does whenever the cricket connoisseur talks about cricket. So the original planned concluding segment was the Ashes. So instead of doing the entire segment, I just want to know two questions, really. Well, two answers from yourself. First of all, who do you think is the key player? One from each team, England and Australia. Who are the key players that we should be watching out for in the 2021 to 22 Ashes?
There's probably a couple in each team, really, from a batting and bowling perspective. Obviously, Joe Root's going to be huge, but I think how England's openers bat are probably the most important factor, because we probably know Root's going to average 45 plus. How England's top order bat is going to be pretty key. So those guys who are going to be chucked into the firing line, how they're going to cope with, you know, one of the best seam attacks in the world is going to be pretty key. And then from an England bowling perspective, I don't think there's an individual in that bowling attack that's going to dominate. I think it's going to be a real team effort. And I think I'd actually think Jack Leach is going to be really key, because he's going to have to take wickets out there. He's going to bowl a lot of overs. It's going to be obviously a hotter climate, rotating seamers from one end. So I'd say if Leachy can give that bowling attack the control he's shown for Somerset, and also the wicket-taking threat, that's going to be really key for England, because the wickets can get real flat over there. So spin's going to play a big part, and obviously I'm biased. But yeah, I'm rooting for Leachy. He's had a horrible... Don't really want to go into it, but he's had a horrible couple of years, and I'm excited for him because he's going to get a good run at it, I think. And I'm hoping he'll play a key part. And then from an Australian perspective, they're just one of those sides, aren't they? They never really roll over. They're such a power in their own country as well. They're really hard to beat. So I'd say the success of Smith is going to be really key, how well he does, but also Marnus as well. Those two guys, very key for Australia. If England can find them in a bad run of form, which is pretty rare, then they might be able to seize on it. And from a bowling perspective, Hazelwood, for me, he's the best. He's so good. And I think he'll play a massive part in it. If he bowls well, I don't think England will win the series. I think it's that big. He's so good. And like I said, he's going to bowl at that top order. So if he gets on top of that top order, then it's going to be tough for England. But, you know, they're going to Australia with a bit of a free hit, really. They've had a nice addition of Stokes coming in, which is huge for that group. That'll give them a lot of confidence. It's an exciting series, and if you ask me what the score's going to be, I actually don't know. It's really interesting, isn't it? It's all over the place, and the whole Tim Payne thing's thrown another thing in the spanner in the works. So they're unsettled, Australia, but they were unsettled going into the World T20 as well. So it's anyone's game, really.
It is, and that's what's quite frustrating, isn't it, with Australia? Because you can never ever rule them out, even when you think they're at the proverbial lowest. They just find an extra gear. They really are just an outstanding team. I'm not for one second saying that Australia, now with that captaincy issue, are going to be steamrolled, because this is going to be an incredibly, incredibly tough series for England. We know how hard it is to win down under. We've been absolutely battered in the last two away Ashes as well, in 2017 and 2013, respectively. But I like the point there you made about the opening partnership, because I think back to 2010-11, and that really was the shining beacon when it comes to England away Ashes. It was an outstanding performance. And a lot of that series was characterised by our two openers, Andrew Strauss and Sir Alistair Cook. Those guys building a platform, laying a foundation for the likes of Bell, Trott, Peterson, Collingwood, Pryor, etc. The likes of Haseeb Hameed and Rory Burns in this Ashes series are going to be absolutely pivotal. Now, we know what they're capable of. Haseeb has had a good start to life in Test cricket. We know that. Rory Burns, I know not many people like his technique, but he has been effective at times in Test cricket. He got that century, didn't he, in the last Ashes, funnily enough, Edgbaston. I was there for that as well, to watch that inning. So, yeah, big up to Rory for that. That was good. Shame about the result, though. But I do think that that top order for England in particular, in a series where both teams have got pretty vulnerable and fragile batting lineups, is going to be absolutely integral. Lucy, would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. Like Jake was saying, you know, like both sides with Australia with their issues, and yeah, looking forward to seeing England players, especially Stokes being back.
Exactly, yeah. That's going to be a massive, massive addition.
You saw like social media reactions from when he said he's coming back. You know, everyone's going, oh, this could change a big thing in terms of the scores and stuff. So we'll see.
I think also the other thing which has thrown another spanner in the works in the last week is Sydney and Melbourne have opened up and you can now fly in as on holiday to Australia. So those two games in Sydney and in Melbourne, they're going to be packed with English. Like, there's going to be loads. So that's also going to play a huge part, I think. You know, the Barmy Army travel well, but if they've only got to travel to two places, they'll travel in big numbers, and that'll be awesome for England, because there's no better place to tour, I'd imagine, as a Barmy Army fan.
Absolutely not. It's funny you mentioned that as well. I think back to 2020 at the start in January, and it was the second test of the South Africa series. Lucy, you'll know exactly which test I'm on about here, but in Cape Town at Newlands, it sounded like the Oval. It was absolutely, it was rammed with England fans. So yes, if you can make the journey out to Australia, make it, support the boys. They're going to need every single bit of help and support that they can get in this series, because it is massive. It really is a way Ashes series. If England somehow pull this off, we'll be talking about it for years. So wishing the boys nothing but the absolute best of luck heading into that series. Fingers crossed they can bring the Ashes urn back to its rightful home here in England and Wales. And I suppose just one final question from you two that I want to get an answer for revolves around predictions. I have to ask it, okay, because we all love doing a prediction, and my predictions usually go horribly wrong, as people who know me from Flow Sports will be able to attest to from the IPL, where I've predicted RCB to win the IPL 2 years in a row. So that hasn't quite gone to plan. But Lucy, I'll actually start with you. What are your Ashes predictions in terms of a scoreline? How do you see this series going, assuming that every single one has a result?
I don't know.
Horrible.
Not seeing a whitewash. I think we'll win. I'm not leaving it at that. I think we win one, maybe two.
So 3 to Australia?
Yeah.
3-2. 4-1, which one?
3-2, yeah, I'll go 3-2.
Okay, interesting. Jake, yourself?
I, when it comes to predictions, I'm very honest, so I don't beat around the bush. I think England will lose, because I think it's a hard place to win. And England are missing a couple of key players. So I am going to say 3-1 Australia. I think there'll be a draw in there, because there tends to be some seriously flat wickets out there. So yeah, I'm going to go 1 draw and 3-1 Australia.
Interesting. So we've got 3-1 and 3-2. Now, for the sake of the England boys, for the sake of the millions of England fans out there, I have to make this prediction.
What are you going to say?
He's going to say 5-0, isn't he?
5-0 Australia. The cricketing gods this summer have not been kind to the cricket connoisseur, but let me just say with absolute certainty, Australia 5-0. England have definitely not got a chance at all, have they? So we'll have to wait and see, but I'm going to go 5-0 Australia. That is my 100% real, certified, bona fide pick for the 2021-22 Ashes. And who knows? Who knows? I might be proven wrong. Hopefully after the first test, there's nothing more that I'd like. And especially for Chris Wokes to get a game as well. I'd love to see Wokes score the winning runs. I think that'd give me bragging rights for life, to be completely honest. If Chris Wokes got the winning runs in the Ashes. I think Lucy, you'd probably leave the podcast. I'd bring it up every single episode.
Leave the podcast, but I'd come back for Dale Steyn's episode. How's that?
Yeah, but what if I brought it up then?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I'd straight leave halfway through. Yeah.
Midway through basically, the recording. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. So those are our thoughts surrounding the 2021-22 Ashes. No matter what happens, obviously I think we all want an England win. That goes without saying. But it's going to be a fascinating, a compelling series. I can't wait for the early mornings, the late nights, the insomnia Okay, the tired mornings. Okay, the early starts. Oh, I can't wait for it. I love away Ashes, to be completely honest. So I say bring it on. But I think, guys, that is a nice place to wrap up today's episode of the Cairns Cricket Podcast. And it has been a very, very enjoyable one. I have to admit, whether or not you two would share those sentiments, that's a completely different thing. But Jake, before we end today's episode, do you just have anything to quickly plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
No, just thanks very much for having me on. Thanks for all your support through social media for me. I really appreciate it. And thanks to everyone, you know, out there who, you know, I've been blown away by the amount of support I get through social media. So thanks to all those Bears fans and other fans who've supported me.
Well, Jake, that's a lovely way to end, I think. A very, very nice message to wrap up on. And obviously, it's deserved. I do have to say that. You're a top bloke. I will say that. One of our first ever guests on the Cairns Cricket Podcast. This has been quite a special episode, actually. I think our third ever guest after Dan Douthwaite from Glamorgan and James Truscott, one of our friends in the broadcasting world who's a Hampshire fan. So yeah, this has been quite a nice episode, to be honest, to kickstart our coverage of the 2000.
Do I get a signed cricket ball for my third, like, a hat-trick, my hat-trick ball? Do I get, like, a cricket ball if I come back for a third time?
That's interesting, actually. We might have to upgrade it, to be honest. Maybe a cricket bat, you know, one of the autograph bats. We'll sign it, myself, Joe and Lucy.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Fantastic. There we go, Jake. We await that with eagerness. Who knows, maybe later this year or 2022 when you get the hat trick. Yeah, we'll try and make something happen. We'll make something novelty out of that, to be honest. I think that'll be quite funny. But that's pretty much it from us three here at the Cairns Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.